Thanks for listening to the Park Hills Podcast. If you want more information on things we're doing, go to parkhillschurch.com or the Park Hills Church app. So you get done with a trip out of the country, and then you turn around and preach a sermon within hours.
It was great.
What was that experience like? Was it the best experience of your life?
Well, yeah. You mean the trip or the preaching? Well, I guess both of them. All right. Here's the thing that I want to be on the record. The sermon was done 3 weeks in advance.
Yeah.
Because I was prepared.
Yeah.
We finished the trip on Friday morning at 10 a.m. I was in my brother-in-law's house. And then it was just that our flight back to this area wasn't until Saturday night.
Sure.
So yeah, it was stinky to fly from Florida. It was a 2.5 hour flight in the evening. But I had all day Friday. I would not have put the sermon on my schedule. Like, we would have worked it out if it was tighter than this. But I had all day Friday to rest. I went to bed early Friday night so I could be physically rested. And then all day Friday, all day Saturday, did nothing. So that Saturday night, even though I got to bed a little bit late, I was still fresh Sunday morning. Yeah. Because I think there's both, preaching is a spiritual exercise and the physical is a part of it. Like, I don't want to be up there giving my second best. And so I was like, I don't want to be tired on stage. So I was intentional about some of these other things so that it wouldn't be too crazy.
Yeah.
If it was crazy, you know, Rich was the backup. He was like,
sure.
You know, we had some things in place.
No, and I'm not throwing you under the bus. You did great. And honestly, the fact that it was as planned out as it was, I wasn't nervous about it at all. It was just, it's always fun for me when people are like, hey, you were in another country this week and you're preaching this week. Yeah, this is what we do. We're good.
Well, so all that to say, you then said it was a great sermon. It was not one of my favorites. And here's why.
Sure.
Like, I think I tried to cover too much. I should have honed it a little better. But all that to say, there's a lot of stuff I feel like was good in there.
Yeah.
But maybe just too much. For a sermon, I probably should have taken 30% of that sermon and done it now in the podcast.
Well, and I think Peter is giving us that problem in many of the passages that we're dealing with.
Yeah.
I mean, it is such a dense letter that I think if you're listening to a sermon, you're going, whoa, that was a lot. We are leaving a lot off because in order for us to teach what the passage is saying, we have to leave some of the bunny trails off of the sermon, which is really what this podcast is for. And so, but even that, with this particular passage, you and I could do an entire episode on a chosen race. We could do an entire episode on royal priesthood. We could do an entire episode on holy nation. We could do an entire episode on people for his own possession. And what we're going to do is talk about two topics. One is sojourners and exiles.
Yep.
And then we're going to talk briefly about what biblical theology is, which I think makes that race, priesthood, nation, and possession thing make sense if you're able to understand what biblical theology is. So we're just going to tell you basically the tool that one would use to make sense of those terms without going into all those terms in a podcast.
Yeah, yeah. And that's where I think some of these things come up so much in 1 Peter that I could have focused on what's unique about this passage rather than trying to cover everything. But yeah, good talk through biblical theology. And we've mentioned this in the podcast before. Biblical theology is a discipline or a system of understanding scripture. I think it's poorly named because one time I was having a conversation with a friend. I was like, oh, you should look at biblical theology. And what he thought I was critiquing was saying what he was talking about before was unbiblical theology, and I was telling him you need to look at the Bible and do biblical theology versus your unbiblical. And what he was really describing was a systematic approach, which if you've heard of systematic theology, there's a lot of books, Wayne Grudem, Bill Derrickson, Charles Ryrie, those guys have all written systematic theologies.
Which is what most of us probably have on our shelf.
Like
a lot of church people have a systematic theology. They don't realize that's what it's called.
Right. And really, our doctrinal statement is a systematic theology.
Correct.
That's what that is. Biblical theology is just, it is in contrast, not contrast, it's not like they're fighting against each other. It's just a different approach that says we're going to look at how God unwraps and develops themes of theology, themes of who he is, over time. And you can trace that theme from Old Testament to New Testament, and the timing is important, the sequence is important, and the theme is important. So you're going to see different, right. Like your systematic theology is going to go through like, who is Jesus? Who is the Holy Spirit? What is the church? What is humanity? All those things. Where systematic theology, or sorry, biblical theology is going to look at themes like the theme of sacrifice, the theme of temple, the mm-hmm. theme of Eden, the theme of,
right.
What's another one?
Those are
the
some good
prophet.
Ones.
Yeah, the theme of a priest. Like
prophet, priest, king.
Yeah, what's the prophet in the Old Testament? What's the prophet in the New Testament? How's prophet, sure. prophecy function today?
And the terms in this passage, race, priesthood, nation.
Yeah. Royal.
Royal. I mean, there's so much that we could dive into. And if you just chase, I think the definition of biblical theology in my mind is you're tracing a theme from as early as it appears in the Bible to the end of it, and you're trying to come to some conclusions about what that term means based on what you see.
Right. And
that's
why—
It's not a word study, but it's close.
That's why I mentioned in the sermon how important it is that we know and understand the Old Testament. Like the Old Testament is so important to our faith. Because when you read something like 1 Peter and he says, you're a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for his own possession, like you just be like, oh yeah, that's great. But do you understand priesthood as it's developed through the whole Old Testament and all the significances of that term and that title and that position? Same with the nation, possession, chosen race. Once you were not a people, like sojourners, exiles, those are all Old Testament themes that have long, deep, and rich definitions. Mm-hmm. And by knowing those in the Old Testament, it helps us understand who we are in the New Testament. So Old Testament is pretty important.
I'm going to link in the show notes that Mickey Klink, our friend in Roscoe, shout out to Mickey. He and Darian Lockett wrote a book called Understanding Biblical Theology. So I'm going to link that book here. If you're, they look at five different approaches to doing biblical theology. And I actually think it's a really helpful discussion that would be worth checking out. So if you want to go do that, you can look in the show notes and you'll see that there. Okay. So biblical theology is this idea of kind of taking a theme or a concept and tracing it throughout the Bible and coming to some conclusions based on that versus a systematic approach, which would say, who is God? And then you go look through the Bible in a similar way.
Yeah.
Grabbing terms, but you're trying to come up with what is a systematic way to describe God? And we would say biblical theology maybe is a little more wild and weird out there. And it's, you know, you're going to wield the term and kind of come to these conclusions based on what it says. Some people would say all theology is biblical theology. And I understand why people want to do that. It comes back to your point that people think that we're saying it's unbiblical if you don't do biblical theology. That's not what we're saying. It's just you've really got to hone this skill and be good at it. The Bible Project is probably, as you mentioned, probably the best at sort of spelling this out for folks. So with that said, one of the biblical theology concepts you could draw from or talk through would be the idea of sojourner. So, you know, the passage mentions that. Why don't you jump us into, okay, so what does that mean from a biblical theology perspective? What is a sojourner?
Well, so a sojourner would be someone who is traveling through a place that is not their home, but existing. And specifically in the Old Testament, the sojourner would be somebody who lived amongst the community, but did not fully join the community, but yet was still there. So there's kind of three categories of people in the Old Testament when you're talking about the people of God, the Israelites, right? There's the alien or foreigner. That's the person who does not belong to Israel, is not following their laws, might travel through or amongst or come and do trade with them, but they are considered an alien. Then there's the citizens, the Israelites themselves. You are an Israelite, you follow the laws. But the sojourner was kind of an in-between category. This person who lived amongst them was not willing to fully become, whether they didn't want to trust or believe in Yahweh or didn't want to take the kosher laws, not circumcised, like all those types of things. But they lived kind of permanently or semi-permanently among the people of God. And so what's interesting is you read through Leviticus, the sojourner comes up pretty often, and oftentimes it's in the context of if Leviticus is giving a law to the people, it tells what the sojourner is supposed to do in the context of that law. And often it is the sojourner is going to keep this law, like Passover, for example. Mm-hmm. If you are in the area and you are a sojourner, like it doesn't say anything about the alien. There's no expectation for an alien to do the Passover. But if you're a sojourner, we expect you to follow our law in this. And there are some laws, though, where it's like even the alien among you needs to do this. And actually, I should double check. Was it? There was, maybe it was the Passover. I don't know. There's just a bunch of them. If you just go to any good concordance, look up the word sojourner and see how many times it's in there about laws given to the people, and the sojourners are expected to do it too, but the aliens are not.
Right.
So that's this category of the sojourner.
So someone who's traveling with the people through a space that they don't belong, and they're joining them in the process, but they're not fully a national. Is that a way to say it?
Yeah. And I wouldn't use the term traveling. And for part of the time, yeah, when the Israelites were traveling around, but even when they were settled in the land, you know, it is Exodus 12, for example, is giving, talking about the Passover. And it says, for 7 days, no leavened bread in your house. If anyone eats leaven, that person will be cut off from the congregation of either Israel, whether he is a sojourner or native of the land. There's an instance there where, like, we expect those who live among us, who aren't going to become us. This is what I think in modern times, this would be like your resident alien or somebody's got a green card. We expect you to still follow our laws, even though you're not fully a part of us. And so when Peter is talking about this idea of being sojourners and exiles, it's this idea that we exist in this community, even though it's not our own, right? That's the exile thing. Like we don't, this isn't our first kingdom, but as sojourners, there's certain rights that we get to have with that and certain responsibilities. Like we're still responsible to follow the laws of the community we're in right now.
Yeah.
And that's really going to be developed in this next passage as we go through 2 Peter or 1 Peter 2 with submitting to authority.
Right. 13 through 25.
Yeah.
Which will be our next podcast as well. So, okay. So, yeah, I'm with you. And as I think it through, I go, all right, so there's different classifications, different qualifications, so to speak, for a sojourner, alien, and then the resident or the person who actually, you know, is a national. But it, I think one of the things that might be helpful for people is that, you know, you're using the Passover example. I think what most of us don't think about, because as I'm describing this, here's what I'm thinking. If we have a sojourner in our country, I guess the direct parallel would be like they should take part in 4th of July, but that holiday has no holy aspect to it, whereas Passover is an extremely different type of holiday. So there's something about the nation of Israel and not even necessarily making the case of you know, the fact that it's a theological kingdom, but the fact is God is setting a new tone and he's saying these are holy days and certain people will take part of certain holidays with you and others won't. That's a way more significant thing than anything we have.
Yeah. I mean, even like Leviticus 22:18 says, speak to Aaron and his sons and all the people of Israel and say to them, when anyone of the house of Israel or of the sojourners in Israel presents a burnt offering as his offering. Yeah. Like the sojourners are doing offerings.
Yeah, they're
as
part
well.
Of the sacrificial system.
Yeah. So I think where it's interesting and where this conversation is going is how do we take is there a parallel to the way God commands sojourners in the Old Testament speaking of nationhood? Does that should and does that parallel our nationhood today, or is the biblical theology connection simply a spiritual connection of us understanding us being spiritual sojourners in the land we're in? Or because there, in we mentioned a book as we were prepping for this podcast that one of our – did you ever have Hoffmeyer?
Yep.
Okay, so James Hoffmeyer is a professor at Trinity. Chris and I both had him for a couple different classes. Old Testament guy, super brilliant, super smart.
Specialty in Exodus.
Yes.
And Egypt itself.
Yep. So he wrote a book in 2009, which was my first year at Trinity, called The Immigration Crisis, Immigrants, Aliens, and the Bible. I haven't read this book, but I took a class with him about a year after he wrote this book, and he he was giving advice on how we should treat the immigration crisis in America. And he talks about this idea of alien sojourner and citizen, and kind of talks about how that can be applied. That's how we should deal with people in our country today. If you're here illegally, you're an alien. If you're here legally, you're a sojourner. If you're here with citizenship, you're a member of the community, a citizen, you know, of course.
Yep.
And then made a bunch of parallels and talked about how Exodus treats that. And I thought, you know, that's interesting. I was kind of processing through it. And then I had a friend who kind of said, yeah, but I don't know if that's what Exodus was trying to describe. Like, that was necessarily giving us a model on how to deal with post-Jesus. Like, that the Old Testament,
yeah.
That's just, if we take the biblical theology approach, is it talking about a spiritual thing? Because politics and religion were exactly the same thing there. And so there was a religious aspect of it, because sojourners were supposed to do the religious stuff too.
Right.
And as we look at things like priests, we don't have political priests today. We don't have,
right,
you know, the priesthood exists as all of us spiritually can connect with God. So yeah, it's just something to think about, like, how do we take these concepts? Is it describing something spiritually now? We are all sojourners in a spiritual sense, or is it giving us advice? Is the Old Testament here giving us advice about how we should treat the immigration crisis in our secular country?
Sure.
That's a huge, like, just big ball of wax that I've just neatly put together and rolled across the table for you to solve. So
yeah.
That's why.
That's not going to happen. But I did put that book in our show notes as well. So Hoffmeyer's book is there. And I think one thing that I would say is, it's always good to use the Bible to help us kind of think things through. And I think the way that I'm understanding a sojourner is they're not becoming a citizen, but they're at least willing to jump in and become a part of the culture. Is that a fair?
Yeah.
So in that sense, yeah, calling people to that is not a bad scenario. And then it makes me think about the church, like the idea that we might have people traveling along with us on this spiritual journey who have not put their faith in Christ yet, but they're interested, and we're going to treat them in a certain way, right? If I don't know if that parallel works perfectly, but
yeah,
something to think through.
Yeah, I don't know. So just here's my idea.
Yeah,
I think that the sojourner concept, what especially with First Peter in play here, we are the sojourners. If we're gonna relate to someone, we are spiritual sojourners. We are sojourners and exiles. We live in a kingdom that's not our own. Mm-hmm. And so for us to say, no, I'm a citizen and someone else is a sojourner, I think we're missing what the biblical theology thing is trying to say.
That's a good point.
So that, I think, untethers all these other aspects to needing to follow a strict model of the Old Testament. However, I think that model of the Old Testament is helpful wisdom for us then to think about the other aspects of our lives and the other things in our world of what does it mean to live in a land that's not our own. The sojourner was often expected to not have to buy into everything, but still act in a certain way that contributes to the community. And so take that wisdom and apply it to things like the church. I don't think it's like a, you must do it this way, but I think there's a wisdom in, like, okay, if there's someone amongst us that is just traveling amongst us, but isn't totally bought in, they're not a citizen of heaven, or they're not a member, but they don't belong to our church. Membership is kind of maybe too bigger. The member or attender, they're not a believer who comes to our church, but they're here. Can we have certain expectations of them? Yeah, maybe. Do they have to buy in right away? No. Are they welcome here? Yeah.
That's more what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
They're probably going to worship with us, even if they're not fully understanding what that means yet. They might be learning God's word with us. But how you treat them might be really important in their journey so that they come to Christ at some point down the road. And the idea of the church is that we're not going to create church to be for the sojourner,
right,
or for the alien. It is for the citizen. But everyone else is allowed to listen in, and they're on a journey with us, but they're not a part of the same level. So if there's an expectation that we lay out in a sermon, it's really for the citizen, with the expectation that the sojourner will probably at least respect it and maybe act like that,
yeah,
but maybe not fully understand why they're doing it yet until the time comes later on.
Yeah, I like that term, like, we're going to ask them to respect that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think, you know, when we talk about church and how we do church, like, we're going to do things that people who don't get it are not going to get it, and that's okay. Like, I think I said from the stage one time, like, Christians do a lot of weird things. Like, I don't know any other place where, like, people get together and do some of the things that Christians do.
Right.
Like, everybody gets in a room, and I guess people go to concerts. But anyway, all that to say—
But at a concert, you're not necessarily encouraged to sing. There's maybe a few songs that you might jump in and sing with.
Yeah, but you're there to be entertained, yes. Not to
yes.
participate, per se.
And worship is calling you to something else.
Yeah, and then everybody, like, pitches in money the way they feel led to in it. There's, right. there's not We're not charging— tickets in, and you could come to our church for free. There's no expectation that you're going to pay money and all that kind of stuff. So we do some.
And occasionally we'll eat something that represents body and
oh, much wine, better example.
But you're not allowed. You don't fully understand why you're doing it, so you're not really invited into that meal with us. It's a family meal, but you can take part. You can see it. You can experience it with us, and hopefully move across the table at some point. But
right. So the idea is, like, we're not going to intentionally make you feel like you don't belong.
Right.
Like, we're not going to intentionally confuse you. We're not going to use words that you don't understand. But you're also not the first person I'm thinking of
right.
when I'm preparing a church service.
Right.
Like, observe. You're not going to get all this. You're not going to understand it all. That's okay. Absorb what you can, because I'm not going to intentionally make you feel like you don't get it. But you're not going to get all of this, and I'm not going to – not always. Sometimes I will go a little out of my way to, like, define a term or something like that.
Right.
But – the purpose of the church service is to worship God for his people to do that.
Yeah, I think that's a helpful way to think about it. So, biblical theology, sojourner, those are a couple ideas. Helpful sermon. Thanks.